the atmosphere laden with cars, some of them occupied. It would be a slow and quite terrifying way to die. Who could have done this? It was too much to believe that it didn't have something to do with my ascent. Ryvich had tricked us in Nueva Valparaiso, and if it hadn't been for the bridge attack, I would have still been trying to assimilate the fact of Miguel Dieterling's death. I couldn't imagine Red Hand Vasquez having anything to do with the explosion, even though I hadn't completely ruled him out of the frame for my friend's murder. Vasquez just didn't have the imagination to attempt something like this, let alone the means, and his cultist indoctrination would have made it very hard for him to even think of harming the bridge in any way. Yet someone appeared to be trying to kill me. Maybe they had put a bomb aboard one of the elevators rising below, thinking I was on it, or would be on one of those below the cut point, or maybe they had fired a missile and misjudged the point to aim for. It could have been Ryvich, but only in the technical sense. He had friends with the right influence. But I'd never figured him as someone capable of an act of that ruthlessness, casually wiping out of existence a few hundred innocents just to ensure the death of one man. But maybe Ryvich was learning. We followed the servitor to the emergency spacesuit lockers, each of which held one vacuum suit. They were of antique design by spacefaring standards, requiring the user to physically insert themselves in the garment rather than have it enfold around them. They all appeared to be one size too small, but I donned my suit quickly enough, with the dexterous ease with which one might slip on a suit of combat armor. I was careful to hide the clockwork gun in one of the suit's capacious utility pockets, where there should have been a signal flare. No one saw the gun. "This isn't necessary," the southern aristocrat was saying. "We don't need to wear any damn..." "Listen," I said, "when the compression wave hits us, which it will do any second, we could be flung sideways with enough force to break every bone in your body. That's why you need to be wearing a suit. It'll offer some protection." Maybe not enough, I thought. The six of them fumbled with their suits with varying degrees of confidence. I helped the others, and after a minute or so they were ready, except for the huge aristocrat, who was still complaining about the fit of the suit, as if he had all the time in the world to worry about it. Troublingly, he began to eye the other suits in the closet, wondering perhaps if they were all truly of the same size. "You don't have time. Just get the thing sealed and worry about cuts and bruises later." Below, I imagined the vicious kink in the thread racing toward us, gobbling the kilometers as it climbed. But now it must have already passed the lower elevators. I wondered if it would be violent enough to fling the car off the thread. I was still thinking about it when it hit. It was much worse than I had imagined it would be. The elevator jerked to one side, the force of it slamming all seven of us against the inner wall. Someone broke a bone and started screaming, but almost immediately we were flung in the opposite direction, crashing against the clear arc of the picture window. The servitor broke loose from its ceiling rail and fell past us. Its hard steel body daggered into the glass, but though the glass fractured into a webwork of white lines, it managed not to break. Gravity fell as the elevator decelerated on the thread. Some element in its induction motor had been damaged by the whiplash. The southern aristocrat's head was a vile red pulp, like an overripe fruit. As the whiplash oscillations died down, his body tumbled limply around the cabin. Someone else started screaming. They were all in a bad way. I might even have had injuries of my own, but for the moment adrenaline was whiting them out. The compression wave had passed. At some point I knew it would reach the end of the thread and be reflected back down again.